What's happening in your left ear only is the new episode of Linoleum Knife, a podcast where we talk about movies. And by we, I mean Alonzo Duralde, who is not me. He's the author of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, which is a very important book for you to go buy right now.
Yes.
Because it's December.
Well, technically it's still November, but it's after Thanksgiving.
Which it's fixing to be December.
It is the Christmas season, for all intents and purposes.
Yes.
And across the table from me is Dave White, who is film critic for Movies.com. And oh, what a week we have for you in this post-Thanksgiving podcast. This week we are talking about Burlesque, Love and Other Drugs, and the movie that we were forbidden to talk about until the embargo ended, that we signed away our rights to discuss until the embargo.
In any format. There was no tweet. No, there was no tweeting allowed, no Facebooking allowed, no reviewing allowed, no talking in an official capacity.
Nothing
allowed. Is my mic on? Are you?
Is your
are
mic
you
is
sure
on.
My mic
yes,
is working?
I'm seeing the big wiggly lines
this
and
time?
Everything. Yes.
All right.
Relax. So anyway, so we'll be talking about that later in the program.
Did you say the title?
No, I want to keep the suspense
alive. Oh, you still want to keep the suspense alive?
Or we could tell.
Just say the title.
All right, fine. We're also talking about Nutcracker 3D.
No. The official title.
Oh.
The real official title of this movie is The Nutcracker in 3D.
Ah.
That's the title.
Sorry.
Which I think is a really kind of a funny way to title it.
That's the least of that movie's problems. But anyway, so, gosh. Let's start with...
Let's start with Nutcracker 3D.
Okay, fine. Screw it. We'll start with Nutcracker 3D. This movie is the worst
thing ever.
Yeah, pretty much.
In the world.
You know how you're not supposed to eat mistletoe because it's poisonous? That's the same that can be said for watching The Nutcracker in 3D.
You know how people feel about death? That's how I feel about The Nutcracker in 3D.
And you don't mean like people in hospices. You mean like people who want to live.
And I'm metal too, and I'm really into death as a concept. But yeah.
So okay, so it stars Elle Fanning, who is a fine actress. You know, if you never saw Phoebe in Wonderland, I highly recommend it.
And this movie is all her fault.
No, it's directed by Andrei Konchalovsky, who has
none of it's her fault.
Who's
actually
directed some good movies? He did Runaway Train, and he did one of my favorite films. You can't get on DVD. Shy People with,
and then he lost his mind
with the late Joel Clayburgh, and yeah, and now I don't know what he was thinking on this one. It's weird. This movie, the first credit that appears, it's not like blah 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 studios or blah 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 entertainment.
It's bank.
It's blah 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 bank.
It's like some Estonian bank.
Yeah, like somebody's funds were frozen in Budapest, and they were like, well, I guess we better make a movie then.
Let's make that Nutcracker 3D movie you've been dying to. To get out there onto the
and
screen.
Apparently he has been trying to get this movie made for a long time. That's the really sad part.
I can't believe that.
That's what I read.
Because here's what happens, all right? This movie is, take everything you know about the ballet, The Nutcracker, with music by Tchaikovsky. And take anything you might also happen to know about the original German
Fairy tale
that was written by E.T.A. Hoffman that was called The Nutcracker and the Mouse King.
Wow, you came prepared this week.
I know my Nutcrackers.
Wow, okay, go on.
Take all those things that you may possibly know about those cultural products and let an elephant poop all over it. That's this movie, because what they do is they take those two things and they obliterate
pretty much
them,
yeah,
and go, you know what we should really do with the Nutcracker? We should make it more like Night at the Museum.
Yeah, that's true. And yeah, that's sort of what they came up with.
And Santa Claus Conquers the Martians and any other, like, oh, and there should be Nazi
rats
in it, and a rat with an Andy Warhol wig, and
played by John Turturro,
and Nathan Lane as
Albert Einstein
singing.
Yeah. Oh, let's talk about the singing for a second. They hired Tim Rice to write lyrics for the Tchaikovsky music.
Screw that dude.
So he sat down and wrote.
No, you're not even explaining it.
No, that's what he did.
Yeah, he did, but they weren't even the. They took the sort of like the bare bones.
It's like the greatest hits of the Nutcracker.
Of the Tchaikovsky score for the and sort of hip hopped them into pop song structure.
Yeah, oh, God.
And then had Nathan Lane sing
and other people sing these songs. And, oh, it's
there's a song about the theory of relativity.
Yes, yes, there is.
This movie.
There certainly
like,
is.
I know we're making it sound like something that's so radical and demented that you think you might want to
run out and see how. No,
you don't.
Trust me,
because it's agony.
No, and believe me, we're people who drove 45 minutes to see Insecure. So I mean, we can tell.
No, that's a movie.
Yeah, we can tell good bad from bad.
Insecure. Is something you need to watch.
When it comes on DVD, keep an eye out.
The letter N dash secure.
It's sort of like The Room, but urban.
Right. Right.
But yeah, Nutcracker 3D, the Nutcracker in 3D, you do not want to endure. You certainly don't want to make your children endure it. It's just staggering.
Your kids will murder you if you watch, if you make them watch this movie.
And no jury in
your
the world
sleep, yeah.
will convict them.
And the defense attorneys will be like,
what's
your honor?
Forced to see.
They were forced to see the Nutcracker 3D.
Case dismissed.
Clearly, these were abusive parents who
yeah.
deserved the beheadings they got in the night.
If the Menendez brothers had seen this movie, they would have watched.
It would have happened a lot sooner.
That too. So yeah.
There's not a bit. Well, there's a little bit of dancing.
There's one scene.
That part where
she dances with the fairies.
Snowflakes or something?
Something like that.
Yeah.
It's all very special effects-y.
And there's a part where the sugar plum fairy or something like a sugar plum fairy ice skates. But it's almost like she's ice skating in the air.
Yeah. Let me put it this way.
You don't know what country anyone's from because half the people sound like they're British, and then Elle Fanning has this American accent.
Yeah, her father is
Nathan
Richard E. Grant.
Nathan Lane is doing this.
And then her mother is Russian or something.
Nathan Lane's doing this sort of strudel and schnitzel sort of,
I'm German.
Yeah, that kind of accent. And I believe I read in the notes that it's set in Vienna in the 20s.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, the newspapers were German. Like, I noticed there was something. It's bananas.
There's this weird sort of, like, Holocaust-y sort of imagery going on.
Yeah, with toys being burned in the factories.
The Bad Mouse King wants to take all the kids' toys and burn them so that the cloud blocks out the sun.
Because rats are enemies of the light.
Rats are enemies of the light. It's horrifyingly awful.
And,
this is why they made us sign that release.
And Eileen
they
Atkins
knew why they were.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
They knew what they were doing when they handed us that paper.
I totally understand. After once we saw the movie, we're like, well, no wonder. Like they should have made us sign a thing that's saying we would never talk
speak about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Eileen Atkins plays like the Rat King's mother. I mean, just
here's the most baffling. The most baffling thing about it. I've been reading some good reviews.
Yeah, I saw one on Salon today. I was like, whoa! I wish I'd seen
Entertainment Weekly.
I wish I'd seen that movie.
Lisa Schwartzbaum gave it a good review.
Gosh.
And I can't. I don't know what she watched.
Words fail me. I don't know.
There's not a justification for that. This movie is an abomination.
Yeah.
Like, I can't really stress
that's not a word we throw around
highly enough.
Six weeks is no longer the worst movie to feature the Nutcracker.
Elle Fanning, it's not her fault. She is a great.
No, she's terrific.
Little, girl actress.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's smart and poised and in that freaky adult way that her sister was at that age, same thing. There's something going on in that family's genetic, makeup.
Laser-like focus.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously, Phoebe in Wonderland. If you never saw that one,
if you want to see a movie version of the Nutcracker, and you'll laugh when I tell you this.
No, I know what you're going to say.
In the 90s, they made one with the New York, Metropolitan Ballet.
Right, with the Balanchine choreography.
With the Balanchine choreography. And, okay, yes, Macaulay Culkin as the Nutcracker Prince. And you know what? In Macaulay Culkin's defense in that particular movie, he doesn't really have to do a lot. He just kind of has to, wave his arms here,
and he had done it on stage, right? I think he came from a background that included having done the Nutcracker as a kid. So it wasn't as shameless
really
as it
nice,
seems.
They stick to the traditional thing. It's a ballet movie. Kevin Kline, gives this really nice, warm sort of narration to fill in the blanks.
Does he play Albert Einstein?
No.
Oh, well, no. Okay.
No. Dom DeLuise plays Albert Einstein in that version.
Sweet.
Yeah. And Sandra Bernhardt is the little girl in that version.
Now, that one I want to see.
That sounds like something I would want to see. Right up my alley. Actually.
But yeah, I mean, I just wrote a book about Christmas movies, and I thought I'd seen the worst ones ever. And I mean, I can't even, like, if I were to do another edition of my new book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, now available, in my chapter of bad Christmas movies, I did bad movies that were fun to watch.
Yeah.
This is not that.
No, you also included Santa Claus the Movie with Dudley Moore.
Yeah.
In your bad movies that are fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not fun to watch.
It's fun to watch if you're in the right mood or with the right people.
It's not as bad as the Nutcracker.
But Nutcracker in 3D is worse. It's worse. We agree on that.
So. It is the worst.
Okay.
I don't know if I've seen a movie, a wide release movie this year that I have hated as much.
And like, you've seen a lot of movies.
Remember Me might be. Mm. I may have hated that as much as this, maybe more. Actually, maybe a little more.
Okay.
Because it's just got that reprehensible
twist
ending.
Right.
That's just gross and exploitive. But this movie is simply merely gross is what this movie
so
is.
It's the winner.
Yeah.
Yeah. So okay. So I think we've covered our ground on that one.
I'll be wanting to talk about it some more as memories surface. Like when you're squeezing like a really dirty sponge and the crud keeps coming up. You can't get all the crud out of the sponge. Image. If I happen to think of something else that I have to say about that movie, I'm just going to blurt it out.
Okay.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll do a year-end show and it'll be something to talk about. So, okay, let's move on to Burlesque, which is the movie that a lot of people were hoping was going to be like this sort of incredibly bad kind of showgirls glitter, you know, wild, campy, over-the-top stinker. No. And it's just there. It's not I mean, it's not good by any measure, but it's not epically bad either.
I resent anyone calling Showgirls a bad movie in the first place. I know I'm digressing here, but I think of Showgirls as a deranged art film.
Yes.
Not as a failure mainstream kind of movie.
I see both sides of this argument.
Yeah.
It's sort of the way I am with
I think Elizabeth Berkley gives seriously, I think Elizabeth Berkley gives one of the most like indelible, go for broke, balls out.
Well, she commits
performances.
She commits,
of
no
the
question.
90s.
She's not phoning it in.
Like, yeah,
she is front and center.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I see. It's like Xanadu. I understand the people that think it's terrible, and I understand the people that
Xanadu
that
is terrible
that adore it.
I don't even want to watch Xanadu again.
Showgirls. I understand the people who think that it is sort of a stealth art film, and I understand the people who think it's a camp classic. So I see both sides of that. But Burlesque is just this thing.
It's real boring.
Yeah. So
makes me sleepy.
Christina Aguilera plays an Iowa farm girl.
She has a dream.
Who has a dream. And she takes a bus to L.A.
It's
and,
really important to have dreams, you guys.
So very
you important. Have to have a dream.
And
she wants it so bad. She even says that in the movie. Just give me a chance, she says, after her audition where Cher dismisses her.
Because that was her chance.
And I was like, well, you just had your chance. You just auditioned. That's your chance. You don't watch even one episode of American Idol without knowing that audition, that's your chance.
Right.
You get that? You had your chance. And when they say no, you don't go, oh, just give me a chance. I can do it. Yeah. You know, like it's.
Well, yeah, the ones who try and sing a different song, that's when you know they're desperate.
Right.
But anyway, Christina.
But see, Cher doesn't have any good reason to dismiss her after that
really.
Audition. Because she's Christina Aguilera. She can sing like until the building falls
down.
Yeah,
well, you'll recall though, in the audition, she doesn't sing. It's all dancing. Because nobody sings.
Oh, yeah,
nobody
yeah.
sings at the club
oh,
until.
Right. They lip sync old songs.
Right.
The
until the night that the evil diva tries to ruin.
Played by Kristen Bell.
Kristen Bell.
Kristen Bell.
Veronica Mars.
Not cast properly.
No, no.
Because there's nothing. You don't. You're not scared of her.
No.
She's not. It's not. She's not just intimidate anybody.
No.
You know.
And she's got this weird brown wig on that just doesn't.
That might be her real hair.
Oh well,
that might be her actual.
She works better as a blonde, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you know, it's a sort of every showbiz cliche imaginable, where you know she gets at the last minute the star is drunk and she gets sent on stage in her place, and then the star tries to sabotage her, and so she sings live, and then suddenly everybody figures out, oh my god, she can sing like Christina Aguilera.
And again, this movie is not Christina Aguilera's fault, nor is it Cher's fault.
No, no, they're fine.
It's Steve Antin's fault for writing a dumb, trite script and for being a terrible director.
Yes,
and.
And I'm still mad at him for Inside Monkey Zetterlund.
And I will say this.
Wrote and starred in like 20 years ago. And I still get nightmares about that movie.
You need to get over that movie.
You seen it?
I've seen it.
And it's
bad, but it's not.
I had that movie gave me PTSD. Seriously.
It's not.
The film critic.
It's bad, comment. But it's not. It's not the Nutcracker in 3D.
Well, in a way it is.
It is the indie film Nutcracker in 3D.
Yes, it is the Sundance version of the Nutcracker in 3D, I would say.
Cher is, if you're a big hardcore old school kind of gay kind of old Cher fan, you're going to be really disappointed because she's not really in the movie all that much.
No, no.
She disappears for long chunks
stretches.
Of time.
And she doesn't get much to do except sort of except fret.
Sing a couple times.
She gets one big like Diane Warren song.
Look miffed.
There are three songs in the movie that have the word burlesque in the title.
It's not just that they have the word burlesque in
the
title.
That are about burlesque, that are explaining to you what burlesque is. It's like, people paid to get in. They probably know what burlesque is.
Right.
And if not, they found out the
burlesque
number.
You
know?
They tell you about how great it is to be at the burlesque club. They tell you about the lifestyle of burlesque.
And they don't even really do burlesque in this movie. Like the girls, as somebody pointed
they're
out,
too skinny.
Yeah, the girls are all like 30 pounds underweight. Like they do not have the curves and the asses.
They don't
you
have
know?
The curves for this format.
Yeah. and it's not clever. Or I mean, it's you know, Steve Antin's sister started the Pussycat Dolls, which should pretty much tell you that we're dealing.
They're
with,
not. They were never burlesque either.
No, but
the
they
Velvet
they,
Hammer Girls.
Yes, but
they
Pussycat
were
Dolls.
Burlesque.
But Pussycat Dolls basically. Coasted on the burlesque revival, but basically were the not as interesting Spice Girls.
Right.
But yeah, so that brand of fake burlesque is what you get in this movie too.
Right. Cher, sadly, can't really move any part of her face that's not the mouth.
Yeah.
There are moments when she looks digital.
True. Like a Navi or something.
Like it looks like you've got almost like digital Cher on screen sometimes. They've got her. They don't. He's such a bad director that he doesn't even know how to light the poor woman properly.
No.
Or present her in a way that will make you, you know, think, oh, that's Cher. I really dig Cher.
Right.
Because there's nothing uncool about Cher.
No, she's great.
Cher's never been, you know, Cher's never been. Anything but awesome, pretty much her whole career. You know, even when she's in crappy movies, you're like, well, it's still Cher, you know. And you know that she's kind of a badass in real life, you know, and real political and stuff. She's cool.
Yeah.
You want the movie to be as cool as she is.
Yeah, not
it's
happening.
It's not.
And Stanley Tucci pretty much does his character from
Devil Wears Prada.
He's like the...
He's the gay guy.
The gay fairy godmother. This one gets laid, at least, unlike the other character.
Right.
With the hot, and the DJ guy, who I said he looked familiar?
Yeah.
He was the obnoxious Dr. Rick character from Fired Up.
Who? What?
Nobody remembers this movie but me. Remember Fired Up? The
I remember
football
seeing it.
Players
it
go to
stupid
cheerleaders.
Cheerleading camp.
Right.
Movie.
I thought it was funny. Anyway, there's the main romance in the film.
You were a soft touch that day.
I thought it was funny. The lead guy is in love with the girl, but she's got the obnoxious boyfriend who's like, he's like a freshman pre-med, but he calls himself Dr. Rick. And the whole running gag. Is,
oh, and he's like,
he is always listening
into, like,
to
Air Supply and stuff.
No. Yeah, like Chumbawamba, like really lame-o sort of 90s hits.
Right.
Anyway, that guy was the DJ in Burlesque.
He's the guy who has sex with Stanley Tucci.
Yes.
In the movie. And Christina Aguilera, really the only reason you would want to go see this thing is if you are a hardcore Christina Aguilera fan. Because she. It's a showcase for her. She's a singer. She's a singer. She's a singer. As an actress, she can walk and talk at the same time, and that's kind of all you need for her to, you know, move from one number to the next.
She doesn't embarrass herself. Like, if she gets she gets a Razzie nomination, that's just going to be bitterness. Because
she's no Britney Spears in Crossroads.
Exactly.
That's for sure. No. Like, that was a horrible acting job. This is like a simple sort of, you know, well, I'm here and I'm saying these lines and they aren't hard lines to say and they don't require much of me. And the main work is going to be when I start singing. Now, you just all sit back and watch me do this hard work of singing, because that's when she lays it down. Like, the girl is so technically proficient and so astoundingly good at this type of singing that she does, that sort of million notes in one syllable.
Paint off the walls.
Yeah. That, you know, you can only sit there and be impressed by her. Yeah. You can't sing along.
No.
There's no singing along to Christina Aguilera.
You
admire it, yeah, at a distance. That's exactly what it is. It's not inviting. It's just impressive.
Yeah, so Dave actually reviewed it on movies.com. I wrote a review for hitfix.com, and I also did a piece for Salon about where burlesque fits
in. Your first piece for Salon,
yes, where it fits into the context of, like, gay diva camp movies. So check it out.
Check out what he wrote.
That's what – yeah, no, no, not the movie. No. You don't need about that. Check out my article.
You don't need to be spending your money. I have gotten no less than 3 emails today.
Yes, me too.
From gay dudes.
We're so excited about
burlesque. Excited. Who are like, let's all go.
It's the way women went to Sex in the City.
Y'all have a good time.
Yeah, I've suffered enough.
I did my time already.
Totally.
With this movie.
Okay. Love and Other Drugs. Here's the thing. Okay, it's the one with Jake Gyllenhaal and Anne Hathaway boning a lot and being real naked.
Yeah.
I was going with it for a while, and then somewhere along the line, I just realized that it was trying to do too many things that it was not going to succeed at. Because there's, like, it's a love story and it's a disease movie and it's a expose of the pharmaceutical industry. Unfortunately,
barely.
It winds up not being any of these things, really, or not doing any of them all that well.
It's a dramedy that's more drama than comedy.
Indeed.
It's the kind of comedy where you kind of smile warmly instead of laugh out loud.
Right.
At just about any of it.
I will say, though, that the one thing that the movie has that it coasts on for most of the way that probably made me kinder to it than I would have been most of the while is that Jake Gyllenhaal and Anne Hathaway have really great chemistry. Like, they're a cool couple. I would love to see them in a better written movie.
Yeah. And I think she's kind of always on point. He just has to look the way he looks. Like, he just has to show up and smile, and
that he is disrobed for much of the film certainly helps.
Yeah, but they're both totally, almost totally naked in the entire movie, and honestly, that's kind of a plus for me. And I'm not saying this in any sort of
prurient,
like, ooh, I'm all turned on kind of way. What I mean is that
it felt,
you know,
French
back in the day, like, in those early 70s movies where everyone was like, let's just take off our clothes, you know,
because we can.
It's bold and we're making a statement about
it's honesty,
you know, freedom. And yeah. And, you know, it's like, this is important to the part. We're going to be realistic about, you know, adult stuff. And if people are going to have sex on camera, we're going to be naked on camera. And now all you see are these women with, like, no nudity clauses in their contract.
Yeah. The sheet up under their armpits.
Bra stays on. And, you know, if a guy's going to walk around naked in the movie, there's, like, a vase or something.
Oddly enough, in Burlesque, it's a PG-13 movie. The one naked ass you see in the film belongs to that Cam Gigante guy.
I don't remember that.
With the cookies.
You see his butt?
You see his butt,
I don't remember that part.
Yeah, but, you know, but yeah, but in
I remember the cookies. That's the thing I was thinking about, the cookies. I sure do like cookies.
You don't need nudity. You just want to
I don't give a damn about Cam, what's-his-face's naked butt. I just really like cookies.
But yeah, so at least Love and Other Drugs, there's a lot of equal opportunity nudity.
But here's my big
complaint. And it's germane to the story about these two people and how they're relating to each other.
They relate to each other through sex, and they use that as a way to avoid
actual intimacy. Commitment,
yeah. Here's my problem with this movie. This could have been, like, nobody went to see Sicko, right?
Mm.
This could have been a smart, funny, romantic comedy that also addressed the idea of healthcare, which it kind of did from time to time. There's something like she has no health insurance or something because she's always pulling out giant wads of cash to pay for where she gets this money. They never explain because she's an artist.
And she's got Parkinson's.
And that's not a spoiler.
Comes up early.
Front and center at the beginning. Yeah. And he works for a pharmaceutical corporation.
No, he works for Pfizer. They name it. You know,
in the worst sort of kind of like, you know, relentlessly smarmy position that you can be, the guy who goes to the doctor's office and tries to tell them to
write prescriptions for their stuff. My dad is a doctor. I used to see those guys come in the office, and they were always just like. My dad was always like,
"Is that where y'all got the keychain that said Doxadan?"
Oh yeah,
for a BM. What is it again?
It was Doxadan.
I wish you still had that. Oh,
it was great. It was Doxadan. I don't know if it still exists. I don't think
Doxadan still exists.
Okay, it was one of those sort of slow acting overnight laxatives, and we had this keychain hanging on a hook near our door, and it said Doxadan in the PM. For a BM in the AM.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much grew up in a house where every notepad, pen, and keychain had drug names on it.
He still has a ruler.
You love that.
It's on the show. I'm pulling it off the shelf right now.
Yeah, so they can see it at home.
I know, but it's this giant acrylic ruler, and on it says Valium, and it says the anxiolytic by which all others are measured. See, because that's a promotional ruler.
Because they measure.
You're measuring things. The effectiveness of Valium with this ruler. This is my favorite thing that you brought from your childhood into our life.
So yeah, so we would always have these notepads and pens and crap, but yeah, they were always super smarmy and just selling, they're always closing, and that's the character that Gyllenhaal's playing. And because he's kind of vacuous-ish as an actor, I think it's a perfect role for him to be playing that kind of charming, smarmy
but
guy.
But the movie doesn't go deep enough or stabby enough with any kind of critique of that situation.
Big plot twist is that he gets to rep Viagra.
Yeah, and so that's new. And they use that as an excuse to just show people clamoring for Viagra like a Willy Wonka golden ticket. It's not it's not a thing where they ever once say, this woman has a real problem on her hands.
Right.
Where it's not just that he can't commit to someone who's got a lifelong degenerative illness, or that she's afraid of allowing someone into her life because she has a lifelong degenerative illness. They could have made the point of that.
Who's paying for this?
Who's going to pay for this? And how is this going to work? But instead, what they do is this love. It's a sort of love conquers all. Love will fix it all. And the ending I found to be very sort of smug and pat and self-satisfied. And it's this very liberal-minded movie, Ed Zwick, the 30-something guy, directed it.
But who did Glory, right?
Whatever.
He's
the 30-something
guy. More germane to this conversation, he did About Last Night, which was also, a young couple in the movie, But yeah, you're right. There's a lot of opportunities for this movie to be about something or say something, and it doesn't take them. And had it been a better romantic comedy or romantic drama or whatever, then that would be okay. But it's not that either. So it's not anything that
if
it could have
been. If you've ever had problems with your health insurance, then this movie will feel a smack in the face.
Well, yeah, it does exist in this sort of cloud cuckoo land where the artist has these wads of money that she's paying for her very expensive, prescriptions and medical procedures for. And yeah, the
longer I spend away from having seen it, the less I like it.
Yeah, you're right.
The ending where it gets all heartfelt and sweet and
it's not
choke-uppy, it's not bad. But then now that I'm done watching it, the longer I stay away from it, the more I think, you know, F this movie.
Yeah, well, it's an ending they don't earn, you know. And I like the two lead performances. I would love to see them in a better movie than this.
Me too.
Maybe they could play Nick and Nora Charles or something. I don't know.
No.
Okay, no. But something fun.
Maybe they should be in the Nutcracker 3D 2.
Oh, God. Let there not be ever such a thing. It is time for us to wrap up, but I will...
Plug all your stuff.
I want to plug all my stuff.
You've got a lot of stuff to plug.
I do. So, as we've mentioned a couple times, I have just written a book called Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, which is a perfect stocking stuffer during this holiday season. You can see me on Tuesday, November 30th on the History Channel. On the History Channel, in a new documentary called The Real Story of Christmas that airs at 8 p.m. Pacific and Eastern.
He's Santa Claus.
No, I'm not.
He totally is.
And I imagine they'll probably rerun it a bunch. But anyway, set your TiVos for that. And I am touring across this great nation of ours in the month of December to flog this book, which is why it's not going to be a new show for like a couple of weeks.
For like 2 weeks.
Because I'm going to be away. But
before the new show happens, we're going to get that cable and get the question answered. And we're going to be in
Stereo.
We're going to be in your right ear.
We'll have the theme music back and everything.
We're not going to keep making you listen to us in just your left ear.
No. Anyway, but here is my tour schedule, and if you are in these cities or know folks in these cities, you know, please come check it out or tell your friends about it. December 2nd, I will be in Seattle screening Kiss Kiss Bang Bang at Central Cinema with a $3 bill with those folks. On Saturday, the 4th of December, I will be in Austin at the Millennium I believe Youth Center it's called. They've got a bowling alley and a movie theater. Check it out. And we're screening the Patrick Stewart version of A Christmas Carol.
Why?
It was their choice. I don't know
what that's about.
I assume they had some good reason. I don't know. Maybe they had a copy lying around. Maybe they're big Star Trek fans. I don't know. But it's
maybe bowling. Maybe when you're watching that movie, if you're bowling at the same time. It makes it more interesting.
It's a pretty good version. I mean, it's not like they said they wanted to show the Jim Carrey A Christmas Carol or something.
Sure.
Okay, so then Monday, December.
They could have shown the Muppets Christmas.
Okay, Carol. Look, I let them pick, so just relax. Monday, December 6th, I will be in New York City, specifically in Brooklyn at Rerun, and we will be showing the 1959 Santa Claus.
Y'all better go to that. That's the best Christmas movie.
Which is insane and wonderful.
Ever.
And Dave and I will be on the Popcorn Mafia in the beginning of December to talk about that film and other Christmas favorites.
That's true.
December 3rd or 4th, I believe that one's going live. Go to popcornmafia.com. And speaking of which, Santa Claus, both the unadulterated version and the Mystery Science Theater version are now available on Netflix Instant.
Like streaming?
Streaming.
Like on-demand streaming.
Yes, they are. And I believe it's...
You got Netflix streaming. You go stream it right now.
And then I think also that Santa Claus is airing
Your whole life is going to change.
Yeah, it will. Trust me on this. Santa Claus is also airing on TCM on Friday the 10th, and they're showing a documentary about the producer, Kay Gordon Murray.
Sweet.
Yeah. So anyway, back to my tour. Wednesday, December 8th, I am in Nashville, back at my old alma mater, Vanderbilt University, and we'll be screening The Nightmare Before Christmas at Surratt Cinema. And then what?
Nothing.
You're looking at me. I didn't know what
that I'm just been. Watching you talk.
December 9th, I'm in San Francisco at the Castro Theater, the gorgeous historic Castro Theater, for a double feature of Gremlins and Black Christmas.
What's first?
Gremlins is first.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
Put the R-rated horror movie on
right,
after
later.
The,
later at night.
After the PG-rated horror movie exactly. for children.
And I will be having a conversation with our very good friend Jenny Olsen.
Really?
Yeah.
About Black Christmas?
Just about Christmas
Just
movies
about
in general.
Christmas yeah. in general. She's rad.
Yes, we love her.
Jenny Olsen is awesome.
So let's see. Friday, December 11th. Excuse me. I'm back in L.A. and doing a midnight show of Home Alone at the New Beverly Cinema. And it is a rare big screen 35mm presentation. And it's the 20th anniversary of Home Alone.
Now you feel old.
Yes. And there might even be guests, because it's Los Angeles. You never know.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. Okay, so then I've got a couple days off, and then Tuesday, the 14th of December, I will be in Dallas, Texas, actually in Fairview, Texas, at a store called A Real Bookstore, and I will be showing my sort of quick clips of Christmas movies and signing books there. And then on the 16th of December, which is a Thursday, I will be at the Plaza Theater in Atlanta to screen I Don't Know What Yet. They haven't decided, but I'm sure it's going to be awesome, whatever it is. And then finally,
maybe it's going to be that Patrick Stewart A Christmas Carol.
Maybe
I should stop badmouthing. It's real. That,
yeah, what's your problem? Have you even seen it?
Discouraging people from going.
Yeah, you quit being a douche.
Just go.
Have you even seen it?
I think I walked through the room.
Oh, okay, then shut up. It's a good version. He makes a very good Scrooge, and Richard E. Grant is in it.
Sorry,
even though he was also in the Nutcracker.
Sorry, Austin Theater. Don't blame it on Alonso. Yes, me being a dick.
Stop it. And then my last date will be December 22nd in San Diego at the Gas Lamp 15, and we're showing Elf.
Elf is great.
Yeah. So it's going to be fun. So I'm going to be subject to a lot of pat-downs.
All you people we know in San Diego, y'all better show up. We know a lot of you people. So
I've got full body pat-downs or naked scans to look forward to with all this flying, I suppose.
But you need to get the pat-down. I don't want you. You should not be going through the scans because it's like an X-ray every time you go. Through.
Oh, I know. They told pregnant women not to do it.
It's cancer. Think of all the times you travel and you get – think about getting an x-ray every time you get on an airplane.
No, I know.
That's dangerous. It's bad for you.
Yeah.
Let them massage your junk.
I can
that's way that. More – that's fun anyway. Way more preferable.
And on that note, we thank you for joining us. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and tell your friends to do likewise. You can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Ask us questions. make comments.
But make them nice and spell them right.
And don't complain about the audio. We know it's not good. Right. We're going to fix it.
No, I'm not working on it. He's working on it.
Yeah. We have experts who have volunteered
to come
forward.
Have we gone over 30 minutes?
Just a little.
All right. Let's knock it off then.
Okay. Thank you for joining us. And we'll talk to you in mid-December when I'm back in town.
Bye.
Bye.